everyone. Well, welcome to Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering one podcast at a time. This is episode 281 for June 19th, 2011. And of course, we're starting off the show with some good voluntary stuttering. I am your host, Peter Reitzis, a person who stutters and a speech and language pathologist in Brooklyn, New York. And I have on the line all the way in the United Kingdom, Leslie Kodumba. How's it going, Leslie?
Hi. Hi, I'm good. You?
Everything is great. I'm so excited to speak to you. Leslie Kodumba is a 21-year-old student from London, currently majoring in sociology at the University of Greenwich, where she expects to graduate in 2012.
Yeah.
Leslie has been stuttering, according to her sister, since she was 4 or 5 years old. Leslie came out of her stuttering closet in November 2009 after watching a Stutter Talk YouTube video. I gotta tell you, I just got chills when reading that.
Yeah, it was, it's crazy, because it seems like yesterday that I found that video, but it's nearly a year and a half, and crazy. Yeah.
Wow. Well, we really are honored to have you, a listener and now a guest, on Stutter Talk. And just to give a little background, Stutter Talk recently published an episode on neuro-linguistic programming, and Leslie wrote us about it. And I immediately said, Leslie, how about coming on Stutter Talk? So today we're going to talk about Leslie, her stuttering, her treatment, and her experiences with neuro-linguistic programming. Can we just dive right in, Leslie?
Yeah, of course.
Now, you have written that you come from a family of stutterers. What do you mean by that?
Oh, yeah. It's both my parents stuttered. My brother stutters now, even though he would never admit that. And I'm sure that a few other members of my family stutter. It wasn't, it wasn't something that was openly talked about at all as I grew up. I thought I was the only one who stuttered up until about 3 years ago. And then I was told by various family members that my parents stuttered and my brother stutters too. So that was a shock.
Oh, sure. I've been following your posts for a few years on the Covert S Yahoo group. Would it be all right with you if I discuss a few of the things that you've written about?
Yeah, that's fine. That's absolutely fine.
So, as I recall, you lost both your parents when you were young.
Yeah.
So did you ever have the chance to speak to them about stuttering?
No. My dad died when I was 12, and my mum died when I was 14. No, not at all. I had a turbulent childhood, so even when they were alive, it was quite difficult to talk to them. I didn't live with them the whole time. I was in care a lot of the time, so no, I didn't get a chance. I knew how my dad felt about it because he made it very clear. It was, and you've probably heard this before, and you speak to other people who stutter, and it's the same old thing, like lots of shouting, lots of stop doing that, and lots of breathe, which is one of my favourites. As I said, I thought I was the only one who stuttered, and I grew up thinking somehow this is my fault because, everyone else spoke normally, I thought. It's only after when my dad died that I was told by my half-sister that, yeah, he did stutter. And that's when I started to look back and started to piece things together. I started to look back and remember when he was on the phone. He used to do things, like he used to breathe a lot. He used to, he seemed a bit nervous when he was on the phone, and yeah, and I started to piece things together and be like, oh, that's why, kind of thing, you know.
Wow. So, Leslie, it sounds like you might have come from a family of covert stutterers.
Yeah, definitely, and I still do. My brother, since I've come out, I guess, there's been times where I would love to talk to him about certain things, but I know he's not in a place ever to admit that he stutters or even talk about stuff like that. It's very difficult, very difficult. I mean, as you know, when you're covert, to talk about suddenly being open and doing this and doing that, it's very painful. And I think you have to be very brave. It takes a lot of courage to be like, right, you know what, I have to do this, and I have to ignore all the looks and the comments and stuff like that. But yeah, I did come from a family where it wasn't, people didn't openly stutter. It was seen as a huge shame. It was seen as something that was very embarrassing. Very.
Yeah, you know, having followed your writings for a few years now, I get the feeling that you're stuttering. What am I trying to say? Okay. You don't write about the frustrations of speaking. You often write about what other people think of your stuttering. Is that the biggest problem for you, is what other people think about your stuttering?
Yeah. It's this. Before I discovered this world of self-help and the fact that you could come to like your stuttering, it was, you know, I was just scared that if anyone knew that I stuttered, no one would ever talk to me. Everyone, I'd lose all my friends, I'd lose all my family, my life would fall apart. And that was, it was the hugest fear ever. That's a big thing. Even now, I don't know whether you read my last post, but it's something that I struggle with. This year, I've conquered a lot of fears, but it's these last few weeks haven't been great. You know, as I guess that happens, life happens, and the last few weeks haven't been great, and it's been hard to focus on kind of accepting my stuttering. So yeah, it's a big thing, and there's times even with people who I feel somewhat comfortable with, it can be hard. If I have one of those days, I'm like, I can't bear the thought of this person who I love or whatever looking at me a certain way. Like, it's just the thrill that I'll break into a million pieces if they look at me in a certain way.
With your permission, I'd like to read from that post that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Okay. So just sit back, because this is going to take about a minute or so.
Okay.
So you were writing about moving to the United States.
Yeah.
And first of all, we're very lucky to be receiving you on our shores in about a week or so. And here's what you wrote. I am waiting for a miracle in the next 10 days. laughing out loud, that hopefully somehow I will get the confidence I had a few months ago. I know this is a crazy way to think, although I think it comes down to the fact that I'm feeling vulnerable and anxious at the moment. Being out of the closet requires an ability to stutter openly and having the strength to expect all sorts of reactions. I don't feel I have the strength to face other people's snarls, looks, and comments, especially from my friends and families. The thought right now feels unbearable, like somehow I will smash into a million pieces if someone looks at me funny. Wow, I mean, first of all, that was, it's so great that you can put all those feelings into words. What would you like to do, ideally, when you're stuttering and you're getting a look of confusion or frustration from the listeners? Like, what would you like to say or do at that point?
I think this last year and a half, a little bit over, I've had the courage. I feel that I do have the courage to say something, to say, just to stop. I've got advice from my family. When something happened a few months ago, I was laughed at while I was suffering by one of my friends, and I froze. I couldn't say anything, and I phoned one of my aunts, and she said, maybe you need to learn to just stop and tell that, ask that person why they're laughing, you know, what's so funny, please tell me, you know, kind of thing. And I hope that I have the strength to do that, but a big part of me, especially in the place, I'm actually coming out this last few days. I feel I'm coming out of that funk I was in. These last few days, I feel that, yeah, I could probably say that. But then I think people don't mean it. I really think people don't mean it. I think I do it sometimes. I laugh when I'm uncomfortable. But say, because I'm going to be working in a camp teaching children guitar. With children, it's a bit easier, but with an adult, I'm not too sure how hands actually. What I would like to do is probably just have the confidence to stop and really address it as assertively.
Yeah, I'm laughing because when I work with kids, you know, I'm a full-time speech therapist in a school. And when I work with kids, you know, they'll say things just straight up. They'll say, Mr. Peter, where'd all your hair go? Or, Mr. Peter, your belly's looking bigger, you know? But the thing is, then you get, or, you know, I work with children who have hearing aids, and the children will say, you know, why does Michael have that thing on his ear? And then I can say, oh, well, that thing on his ear helps him hear better. He has trouble hearing. And kids just go, oh. Like, I find if you just give them a straight up answer, adults can be more challenging. I haven't had to do it in a few years, but I can recall when I came out of my stuttering closet, I would use voluntary stuttering for at least 3 years, maybe 3.5 years, every day. And I can remember like trying to figure out how I best wanted to respond to laughter or weird looks. And I found that I didn't have to say something every time, but there were times I really felt I needed to say something. And I found that saying something that did not put the listener in a defensive position, like saying something like, oh, you might not know, but I stutter. I speak with a stutter. That's why I talk like this. And then what would generally happen would the person would say, oh, you're stuttering. I'm so sorry. Like, kind of like, you know, they weren't quite sure what was going on. And by just me telling them I am a stutterer, it seemed to make that type of uncomfortable laughter stop. Not every time, of course, but that was just my experience.
Yeah, Yeah, and I haven't advertised for a long time, for a few months. I just haven't. I have the same approach that you do. Really approaching it kindly and not confrontational. I think that really works. My aunt, she's very much like, well, no, tell them to their face. Don't take it lying down. It's rude and blah, 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 blah. But I guess she doesn't stutter, so she doesn't, you know, it's a whole fact. We're going to deal with people like this our whole lives. And you can't always be angry.
I agree, and you know, from my perspective, I want allies, not enemies. So by telling people in a nice way that we don't really like them laughing at us, I think that's, for me at least, is the way to go. So I like what you just said. Just want to remind everyone, this is Stutter Talk. Peter Wrights is speaking with Leslie Kodumba, who is in London. Stutter Talk can be contacted 206-666-5340. StutterTalk@StutterTalk.com. Leslie, I have a bunch more questions to ask you. Do you have some time?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, great. So you're moving to the United States to teach guitar to children, and you're going to be meeting a lot of new people. Are you facing those thoughts right now in your mind of, do I tell everybody right away I stutter? Do I wait for the appropriate moment? How are you going to tackle that?
Yeah, I think it's something that stutterers just do. Even I think something that we try to learn not to anticipate before. But yeah, it's always weeks ago I was thinking about this. It's probably been more prominent in the last week and a half because it's got closer and closer. But yeah, I'm thinking, I mean, you know, when I go to the airport, there's going to be a bunch of us flying over together. It's going to be about 7 of us, 8 of us, and I'm thinking about that. I'm just like, oh, how am I going to approach it? I bet you I'm going to be so stuttery, and you know, I'm just like, I bet you it's going to take me about 10 seconds to say my name, and it's just going to be weird and blah blah blah. And you know, it's and I know deep down, after a year and a half of really working on it, that I'm strong. I often think that I'm not, but I'll be fine. I will stutter probably, but and it may be uncomfortable for me, for them. It may be embarrassing, but hey, you know, it's just that's life. It's not. I won't die. I won't self-destruct.
As I listen to you talk, what impresses me so much is that you're not talking about fluency. You're not saying, you know, how am I going to be fluent at that moment, or how am I going to not stutter at that moment? Are you pretty much set in your mind that you're not going to be hiding your stuttering when you come to the United States?
Yeah, of course, because it's impossible to hide my stutter. It's, you know, whereas probably three years ago, I'll be hoping that somehow I'll have, you know, I'll have a time where I'm really fluent, and you know, it'll be great. That's not going to happen. I think now I'm more hopeful that I will feel okay about whatever comes out of my mouth, whether it's a long block, a short block, whether I'm looking down or I'm looking straight at the person. I try my best, even when I'm having bad times, to keep eye contact as much as possible. And if I do, I go, well, look what I did. I kept eye contact. That is amazing. That is something that I wouldn't have done 3 years ago. Look how far I've come. I hope more that I'm not too hard on myself, more than hoping for to be fluent.
I love that. Being good to yourself is better than being fluent. Okay, that's great. I want to ask you one more question before the break, and then after the break, I'd love to talk to you about the different types of treatments you've tried. You wrote on the Covert S group about presentations and public speaking,
yeah.
And you wrote stutter with confidence and fake it till you make it. What do you mean by, well, I think we know what stutter with confidence means. What did you mean by fake it till you make it?
That was ages ago, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. I think I was reading something and I liked it. Someone was saying fake it till you make it. And I can't remember what I meant, but I think I was trying to say that even if it feels awful and it feels that you can't do it and if you don't feel very confident, I think it's weird because I change and I learn by reading a lot of books, and I probably changed my view on that actually, because I know it's for a lot of people. It's not easy to fake something. It's just impossible. I think what I would feel now more is that kind of maybe sit with it. Sit with whatever you're feeling, and maybe not be too hard on yourself. I think sometimes if you can look like you're confident, where really inside you're so scared. That can help. But I think that's what I meant. Maybe I like for instance, when I did I did my presentations this year, I did three. One of them I was shaking like hell, and I'm sure everyone could see it. It was very visible, but there was something in me, and I was stuttering quite bad actually, and it wasn't stuttering bad, but it wasn't controlled. My mouth went dry. It wasn't good at all. But there was something in me like, I'm getting through this. Like, I don't care if I look scared, but inside I felt good. You know, it's kind of that mixture of feeling scared and feeling good. I don't know whether I've answered your question.
No, I don't think there is any exact answer, but I think that's great, and you're one of the few people who will say, oh yeah, I said that, but I think I've got a different view now. That's fantastic. And I like what you said, you know, sit with what you're feeling. Although I have to also say I like what you said, fake it till you make it, and what I took from that was, even if you're not feeling confident, you know, maybe go up there and try to look confident. It reminds me of, I'm working with a student now, a young lady, who has to give a very big presentation. And when she practices the presentation, she's sort of tampering down her emotion. She's really focusing on not stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, something funny happens and she laughs.
Right.
And I show her the video and I'm like, look, when you laugh, when you're comfortable, when you look comfortable.
Love that. It's great.
Yeah, don't you, like, put yourself, and she knows, she's like, yes, the audience will like me laughing. And I'm like, you have a great laugh.
Mm.
You know, tell you, like, I'll say to her, like, when you're speaking, like, we'll even write it in the presentation, smile here, to get used to smiling in front of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's sort of fake it till you make it.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's like, after that presentation that I did, I was still shaking and I was all over the place. But afterwards, I kind of took over the presentation. It was actually a group presentation. And I had done loads of research and I took over. I was asking people questions. I was asking what they think about it. And I was stuttering. And I think inside, I was scared. But I think I knew that I could do it. And, you know, it's good to laugh. I often laugh at myself. Just because, you know, I do some things and I'm just like, okay, why? Why did you do that? But, yeah, no, I do. I totally get that. And it's great that, it's good if you can smile through something that's very difficult.
Well, let's take a break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk to you about your experiences with speech therapy and with other forms of treatment.
Yes.
This is John Stossel of ABC's 2020. Give me a break. You're listening to Stutter Talk.
Hi, folks. I'm Mel Tillis, and nobody knows better than I do how stuttering affects your life. But help is only a phone call away. Just contact the Stuttering Foundation of America at their toll-free number, 1-800-992-9392.
Hey, Peter. After listening to your podcast, 270 AM, on NLP, I have to agree with a lot of the stuff that you guys talked about, you know, speaking in one situation. You should be able to speak in all situations is, in my mind, ridiculous. But one thing I use is anchoring. And the way anchoring works, the way I remember it, I took a course in 2004 on this stuff, but I still use the anchoring, is that you allow yourself to go back to a time when you felt really good. It might have been on the beach, at the sunset, hiking in the woods, and you really get that feeling fully. And then you press a spot on your body or something like that physically, and if you do that enough times, eventually you can just press the spot and then you get the feeling. And for me, it's helpful in that if I'm feeling anxious or something like that, I just press the spot and, you know, a wave of good feeling comes over me and enables me to use my tools or whatever strategies that I'm using a lot easier. And that's pretty much what I still use. There's 1,000 different patterns that they teach, and a lot of them are really involved and collaborative, so it's just, you know, not, for me, it wasn't something that I could easily use whenever I wanted, so I just didn't use the other patterns. Anyway, I thought I'd throw my 2 cents in there. Take care. Thanks for all of the podcasts.
Hi, this is Dr. Jerry Maguire, and you're listening to Stutter Talk.
Every time I look into your big brown eyes, I get paralyzed, paralyzed. Every time you take a step down.
Welcome back to Stutter Talk. Peter Wright is here with Leslie Codum Ba, who is in London. Thank you so much for joining us today. I know that you've tried neuro-linguistic programming. I'm not sure about your other therapy approaches, but let me just say that we're not going to mention the name of the person you worked with or the name of any of your therapists, but I've been struggling a little bit as a host here with the topic of neuro-linguistic programming because I'm not sure if I should refer to it as a treatment or a therapy. And I just want to say to the listeners that maybe for today's purposes we'll talk about your NLP guide or your NLP instructor or your NLP coach. And I'm being careful because as a speech language pathologist, I'm certified in New York State. I did graduate school. I have an undergraduate degree. My pregraduate requisites hundreds and hundreds of hours supervised. And I'm just not sure if we can tell how much experience a person who is an NLP guide or instructor has. Mm. So I don't want to use the word therapy because, you know, when we talk about therapy on Stutter Talk, we're usually talking about therapy with a speech language pathologist who's licensed and certified. So I'm not trying to demean the NLP guides, but I also don't want to raise them to the credibility of a licensed speech language pathologist because I do think they're very different things. And in my eyes, I see an NLP guide more like somebody you would meet at a self-help conference, somebody who really wants to help and support. But maybe we shouldn't raise them to the level of a licensed speech language pathologist. So we're not going to say the name of your of any of your therapists, and we'll just refer to them as her or she, even if some of them were men. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, it's fine.
So what types of different treatments have you tried?
Not a lot. I had speech therapy when I was very young. It's probably about 2 sessions because I can't remember it. It wasn't very effective at all. And then I had nothing up until I found my guide, and I found her during. I don't know how I found her. I think I was googling people, and I was googling people who could help people who stutter. She said that she could really. I think she did use the word cure. I watched one of her videos back the other day, and I think she did use the word cure. And at that time, someone who was 17, I was like, "Oh, well, this is brilliant," you know.
And if I could just jump in there, that's one of the things that concerns me about the certification is that I went to this person's website, and one of the testimonials said that this person could cure stuttering. Not the person themselves, but on their website, the testimonial said, this person can cure stuttering. And then I saw a post online this person had made where they said that there is a cure for stuttering. And as a licensed speech language pathologist, as a certified professional, I can't say that.
No.
If I said that, if I had that on my website, then I could be brought up on ethical charges.
Right.
But nonetheless, I also know that you had some good feelings about this person, that you said that they did try to help you, and in some ways they did help you. So what did you get from your experience with neuro-linguistic programming, and what did you not get?
First of all, yeah, she's a lovely lady. I mean, she, you know, she was very, very lovely. I was so young, and some of her stuff worked for about 2 weeks. It was what she told me to do. If I can say it.
Oh, and was this in person or was this on Skype?
This was in person, yeah.
In person, okay.
She's
okay.
Got her own offices. But mm-hmm. Is it okay if I can say what she told me to do and or what it is?
Oh, sure, of course.
So first off, she said there's 2 sessions. The first session was more focused on getting me to start thinking positively, and it was so she told me that I should use visualization. So one of the things, if I can remember right, was that she told me to close my eyes while I'm sitting or standing. And she told me to imagine that I was on stage and imagine that there's a spotlight on me. And just, she was saying, I have to really focus in on my body, so focusing on my breath, focusing on just all the sensations that are happening in my body. And that bit is, I do a little bit of that now, because I do meditate. But yeah, and then she said, picture myself as someone who can speak fluently. Picture myself standing tall, and you know, all this stuff. And then she said I should do that every day before I went into school. And yeah, the first week and a half I did it, and I felt amazing. I felt absolutely amazing, and I was like, wow. Like, I felt, I still couldn't speak in class, but I felt like I was walking to the taller. And then...
Did you say you still could not speak in class, or could
speak? No, I couldn't. It was a very deep fear, and even if I tried to, and I failed, I wouldn't take it well. So that wasn't...
Okay.
Yeah.
So at this point, this guide, this NLP guide, is asking you to use visualization, but there's no real discussion of specific speaking mechanics.
Not yet, no. She said okay. In the second session, which I didn't get to, but the first session was more about positive image and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, and after 2 weeks, I started to feel really down. I was just like, I can't keep this up every day.
Right.
I still find it difficult to talk in class, to talk to people. This is, I'm not sure this is working. And at that age, I mean, it was hard, you know, when you're a teenager, you've got all these hormones, and I got really down, and I was just like, God, is it me? Can't I do anything? Yeah, so I didn't go to the second one, and she offered, I did phone her, and saying how I don't think it's working, and she offered to see me again for free, but it didn't happen just because she was always busy.
I have so many things I want to ask you. When you wrote me, you said that this person was very nice and they did help you a little bit, but they didn't understand the ideas of acceptance or advertising or desensitization, which you believe are crucial in dealing with stuttering. Did you think that this person understood stuttering and people who stutter?
No way, no. I think she's very good at in her field. I think she's good with a linguistic type of stuff, like the way she spoke. Her voice is very, she projects her voice. You can tell she's a very good public speaker in the way she can probably draw the audience in and stuff like that. But as in stuttering, I didn't think she understood that it's a whole different ball game. It's not just learning how to public speak. It's a lot of other things. There's all the shame and all the guilt, and you know, especially someone like me, when I'm stuttering. I think most people stuttering emotional to some extent, and you know, yeah. So, but I think she's great, but I think she didn't think that you can stutter, and also in some way find for acceptance in that. She just thought, as most people think, that you have to be fluent to succeed, which is...
Yeah, which is so weird to me. Just, and, you know, I know there's also some speech pathologists, perhaps many, who feel the same way. You know, you're somebody who identifies as a covert stutterer, and you go to somebody for help, and they say, you know, from what it sounds like you're saying, they want you to focus on fluency. And, you know, as a former covert stutterer myself, you know, focusing on not stuttering, on fluency, was part of the problem for me. Let's just remind everyone, this is Stutter Talk, Peter here with Leslie Kodamba. Is there anything else you'd like to say about your personal experience with neuro-linguistic programming?
You know, it's, I don't know what it's about. I haven't read up on what exactly they do. I went to an open day in London. It's the BSA, which is the British Stammering Association. They do an open day every year. So I went to that last year, and there was this man, actually, who was an NLP. And something about it, it still draws me to it, but not anything to do with my stutter. This man, what he said, he used the word cure as well, which was just annoying, again. And he was saying, you know, I feel confident when I talk to people. I don't notice that I stutter, because, I don't know, it seems like he transcended that place of being aware of his stuttering, and he just, he did stutter, clearly, but he said it just didn't bother him as much. I don't know whether that's what they do. But something about, I was like, that's quite interesting. I'm quite interested in kind of anything to do with accepting myself, accepting how I speak, and that was interesting. But he again, he was, seems like he was obsessed with the whole fluent thing, and I was just like, I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I mean, that it might be good for some people, but it sounds like for you it's not. For me, it certainly wasn't. You know, when I look on some of the different NLP websites, and when I've spoken to people off air who practice NLP or who have looked into it, they say with some confidence that NLP works to change the chemistry of the client.
Right.
Did you hear any such language like, oh, this is going to change your chemistry?
Chemistry. I'm not sure what that actually means, but
I'm not either, but I keep seeing it, and I've heard it. It's been said to me, too, by people who believe in NLP and who practice it. And again, I feel no reason to say their name on air, but, you know, I've heard it, so.
It's, no, it was, the person who I went to was, I think in some way, when I think of chemistry, I might have, I, at first that probably comes to my mind was something spiritual, and I don't know, I think stuttering, I think it's very dangerous mixing stuttering with any type of religion or any type of spirituality. I think it's best to when you're talking about it, when you're trying to help people, it's best to kind of stick to the facts of what you know, which is probably that, you know, they help people they help how people feel about themselves. So making them more confident. I think it's dangerous to say like, oh, this is going to cure your stuttering, or this is going to affect your stuttering in this way, because I think stuttering is something that is so complicated. And I think, obviously, you know, speech therapists and tools, I think that's different, because it's not relying on something that, you know, that hasn't really been looked into. You know, I think...
Yeah.
Chemistry thing, even chemistry and stuttering is a little bit, I don't know why anyone...
Dodgy.
yeah, that's it. That's, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the word.
Yeah. Yeah, I it's not a word I typically use, but I do have British friends, so now that I'm speaking to you, dodgy comes out. Isn't that funny? Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have time for a few more questions?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
This may be my last NLP question to ask you. There are many flavors of neuro-linguistic programming I personally do not like. Mm. One of the flavors I do like is when they talk about taking personal responsibility, that you are able to make changes. Did you get that vibe from your short time trying neuro-linguistic programming, that you could make changes, that you could become responsible for your stuttering?
Yeah, I think I did, but at the time, being 17 and the place that I was in, it probably fell on deaf ears. It was something that I probably would have took as, you know, she was probably saying, "Oh, I have to take responsibility for this. So is it my fault?" You know, it was such a sensitive topic. I wouldn't have listened to anyone who would have said anything like that. I just wanted it gone. I just wanted it cured. And I thought, you know, when you're a teenager, you're just like, why is this happening to me? You know, the whole world is against me and all this stuff. And it was a difficult time, such a difficult time. And I think that year was difficult. But, you know, I don't think, I think now it's definitely just like, yeah, you have to come to a place where you feel that, you know, you can make changes. And it's only this last year and a half that I've realized that. But she definitely did try to get that across. Definitely did. But okay. I found what she was saying was too high of expectations at the time, and I think that's what fluency is. I'm the type of person that's just like, that's something that I can never reach, and I felt that. And
you said that well. You said fluency, too high an expectation. It's very interesting. So let me just ask you one or two more things. Again, Stutter Talk, Peter here with Leslie Kodomba, who is in London. You've tried, I know that you're very involved in the stuttering community. Have you considered in the last year or so going back to seeing a speech therapist or another professional to help you deal with your stuttering?
Yes, there is a self-help group that I've only been a couple times. Personally, I don't find the self-help group in London helpful for me. I think I probably, I I probably feel that there's probably a little bit, there's a different attitude to stuttering from like an English attitude and an American attitude. I find here it's I don't know whether you've heard this before. It's quite difficult here, and there's not a huge stuttering community. And I think I've always been curious to kind of test what I think, just to go over and see whether that's true or not.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot.
Yeah.
I've heard some Europeans say from Australia, United Kingdom, New Zealand, that there's also amongst stutterers in Europe, there's a lot more focus on fluency than on acceptance,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, it's so true. And even the self-help group I go to, that's why I've only been a couple times, because it's very difficult because there's no talk about anything like that, anything about acceptance, or it's a lot on fluency and talking a certain way. And I find, I don't know whether this is true everywhere, but I find people here, there's a lot of shame with stuttering here, and even meeting someone who stutters, there's a lot of people trying not to mix with other people who stutter, and that's probably quite common in most places. But there's
No, I was just saying, yeah, I've had that experience, yeah.
Yeah. I still feel there's a feeling here. Maybe it's because, you know, this is my home, but there's a lot of a deep feeling of stuttering is very shameful, and it's something that you need to get rid of. And and even the, you know, that's why, you know, the King's Speech was a huge thing, and, you know, that was great, because especially for, I think it was a good thing for people in most countries, but I think for English people, it was kind of like, oh, okay, you know, stuttering is not something that, you know, you need to get rid of.
That is really neat to hear. I hadn't heard that before, but so maybe the King's Speech, while it was good for America, was even better for Britain.
Mm.
That's great.
Yeah. But there's actually this kind of center here. It's called City Lit, and they do different courses. Like they have a desensitization one. They do all different ones, really good ones. They've got an acceptance one, and yeah, I want to do that when I graduate. I don't have the time or the money now, but it's something that I would love to do. And speech therapy, I signed up for speech therapy about a year ago, but it fell through. It didn't work out for some reason. And yeah, I think now I'm starting to get in the place where I can say to myself that, you know what, there's certain things that I can do to make me feel more at ease with my speech and with myself. So I'd love to do one of those courses in next year, because I think sometimes I tend to think that I know everything. I think recently I've realised I do need some help, especially these last few weeks. I can learn from people, but I think with stuttering, it just feels like even when I've been watching some videos on certain people, you know. And it just feels like they're just trying to add something else, you know, under the belt. Like, okay, we can do this. We can probably cure this, you know. It's like they've just picked stuttering up, and they haven't really thought about it. They, you know, I'm thinking, have you talked to people who stutter? Have you talked to speech therapists? Have you done your research? I think there's a lot of misconceptions, and I feel that they a lot of their work is based on that instead of the truth.
Yeah. Well, I've seen that too, and I think that's such an excellent point that some of the neurolinguistic programming people have a humongous, I don't want to say scope of practice because that gives it a lot of credibility, but they treat people with many, many different, again, I use the word treat, I'm trying not to use that word, but when you see a guide, an instructor who works with people who have fear of insects, people who stutter, people who are afraid of flying, people who are afraid of, I don't know, war or terrorism. I mean, it seems like, you know, at some point you can't be an expert in everything. And so I've seen that myself, where I do wonder if some of the NLP people know that much about stuttering. I mean, so somebody recently said to me that some of the people who practice neurolinguistic programming are, quote, true believers. Like, it's a religion. Like, it can do everything. And they said to me, you know, Stutter Talk's going to continue to get hostile or negative email from true believers,
right?
You know, and that's probably true. Anyway, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us today at Stutter Talk. Leslie Kotenbaugh, all the way from England. We're looking forward to getting you on our shores here.
Thank you. Thanks so much. It was great being on the show. I've been listening for ages. So yeah, and I don't think I've talked about my NLP experience for. I don't think I've talked about it with anyone. So yeah, it was great.
Thank you.